The Paramount logo, an arc of stars over a high jagged mountain. A sea of dense white clouds under a dark sky and a full moon. Paramount Pictures presents a Howard W. Koch production. Like the dorsal fin of a shark, a tail of an aeroplane, the vertical section pokes up through the clouds and glides smoothly across from right to left. It reappears on the left further away and glides over to the right. The tail drops out of sight. The whole aircraft surges up, a huge black shadow displaying its underbelly. The title in stark white letters, Airplane. The plane lands, the landing lights cutting through the inky darkness, starring Robert Hayes, Julie Haggerty. Outside the terminal building, the wide road is packed with traffic. Costume designer Rosanna Norton. Inside the terminal, two uniformed pilots stride through.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
A minibus.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
Flight crew get out.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
A stewardess, tall, slim Elaine, her thick brown hair pulled back into a ponytail, walks into the terminal.
There is no stopping in the red zone.
A man in a red tunic stops her.
Hello, we'd like you to have this flower from the Religious Consciousness Church. Would you care to make a donation?
No, but thank you anyway.
Outside, a white saloon pulls up and passengers get out.
Of passengers only. There's no stopping in the white zone.
No, the white zone is for loading and unloading, and there is no stopping in the red zone.
The red zone has always been for loading and unloading. There's never stopping in a white zone.
Don't tell me which zone is for stopping and which zone is for loading.
Two Hare Krishna monks. A girl approaches them.
Hello, we'd like you to have this flower from the Church of Religious Consciousness. Would you like to make a donation?
No thanks, we gave it the office.
At the security checkpoint, a woman watches an X-ray monitor as passengers pass through, a man in a suit.
Would you put all your metal objects into this dish, please?
The man deposits a set of keys, then detaches a metal hand and a metal leg. Outside, a husband and wife get out of a car with their young son.
There's just no stopping in a white zone.
Oh, really, Vernon? Why pretend? We both know perfectly well what it is you're talking about. You want me to have an abortion.
It's really the only sensible thing to do. If it's done properly, therapeutically, there's no danger involved.
Taxi!
A man hails a cab. A yellow cab screeches to a halt, mounting the pavement. The young driver jumps out as the man gets in.
I'll be back in a minute.
He leans in and starts the meter. The cab driver marches into the terminal, ignoring the man offering a flower.
Hello, sir. We'd like you to have this flower on behalf of the Church of Religious Consciousness. Would you kick...
The cab driver pulls off his jacket, which he leaves in the hands of the flower man. Titles, written for the screen and directed by Jim Abrahams, David and Jerry Zucker. On the runway, a man in overalls wearing ear defenders stands in front of a plane directing it with hand battens.
Hey, Larry, where's the forklift?
Forklift! It's over there by the baggage loader!
Larry waves his batons towards the terminal, then watches in horror as the plane turns. The nose of the plane crashes through the tall glass window of the terminal. The cab driver sprints along a corridor. He catches up with the stewardess, Elaine.
Elaine!
Ted!
I came home early and found your note. I guess you meant for me to read it later. Elaine, I've got to talk to you.
I just don't want to go over it anymore.
I know things haven't been right for a long time, but it'll be different. Like it was in the beginning. If you'll just be patient, I can work things out.
I have been patient, and I've tried to help, but you wouldn't even let me do that.
Don't you feel anything for me at all anymore?
It takes so many things to make love last. Most of all, it takes respect. And I can't live with a man I don't respect.
She turns and walks away. Ted gazes after her. He turns and looks directly at us, cocking an eyebrow. In a terminal shop, a tall, uniformed pilot with white hair, Captain Over, looks through the magazines. He flicks through one called Modern Sperm.
Captain Over, white courtesy phone. Captain Clarence Over, white courtesy phone.
Captain Over goes to a bank of four phones on the wall and picks up the red one.
No, the white phone.
He puts it down and picks up the white.
This is Captain Over.
One moment for your call from the Mayo Clinic.
Captain Over, white courtesy phone. Captain Clarence Over.
I've got it.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your call.
This is Dr. Brody at the Mayo Clinic.
There's a passenger on your Chicago flight 209er, a little girl named Lisa Davis, en route to Minneapolis. She's scheduled for a heart transplant. We'd like you to tell her mother that we found a donor an hour ago.
We have the heart here, ready for surgery. We must have the recipient on the operating table within 6 hours.
I want you to make sure that she's kept in a reclined position and that a continuous watch is kept on her IV. Also,
it's very important that she remain calm.
Excuse me, this is the operator, Captain Over. I have an emergency call for you on line 5 from a Mr. Ham.
All right, give me Ham on 5. Hold the mail.
An ambulance pulls up on the runway alongside a plane. Two male nurses in white uniforms get out and open up the back doors. A woman, Mrs. Davis, gets out, holding onto a bag for a drip. The nurses unload a stretcher, on which lies Lisa Davis. Ted is still pursuing Elaine.
Look, you'll be back in town tomorrow night. We'll have dinner. We'll talk things over.
I won't be back. I've requested the Atlanta run.
Elaine, I promise I can change.
Then why didn't you take the job that Louis Netz offered you at Boeing?
You know, I haven't been able to get near a plane since the war. Even if I could, they wouldn't hire me because of my war record.
Your war record? You're the only one keeping that alive. For everyone else, it's ancient history.
You expect me to believe that?
It's the truth. What's hurt you the most is your record since the war. Different cities, different jobs, and not one of them shows you can accept any real responsibility.
Elaine, if you just give me one more...
It's too late, Ted. When I get back to Chicago, I'm going to start my life all over again. I'm sorry.
She goes. A flower man comes up to Ted.
Excuse me, we'd like you to have this flower from the Church of Religious Consciousness.
Without looking at the man, Ted punches him. Passengers are boarding the Trans-American airline. Elaine and another stewardess, Randy, are greeting them.
Hi, what can you see?
Oh, there you go.
You can just follow all the way back.
Thank you.
Hello.
Captain Over is in the cockpit with his co-pilot, Victor.
Any word on that storm lifting over Salt Lake, Clarence?
No, not likely, Victor. I just reviewed the area report for 1,600 hours through 2,400.
Uh-huh.
It's an occluded front stalled over the Dakotas, backed up all the way to Utah.
Yeah, well, if she decides to push over to the Great Lakes, it could get plenty sleepy.
Uh-huh.
And what about that southern route around Tulsa?
I double-checked the terminal forecast, and winds aloft. High and far ceilings all the way.
Where do they top out?
Well, there's some light scattered cover at 20,000, icing around 18.
A maintenance man is trying to shut the bonnet of the plane. He falls off.
Denver it is.
Sorry, Clarence. Latest weather report shows everything socked in from Salt Lake to Lincoln.
Oh, hi, Roger. Glad to have you aboard. Victor, this is Roger Murdoch, Victor Basta.
How do you do, Roger?
Nice to meet you.
Roger, I was telling Victor, I reviewed the area report for 1,600 hours through 2,400. There's an occluded front stalled over the Dakotas.
The passengers are loading luggage into the overhead lockers. A young boy is pretending to read a magazine but trying to look up a woman's skirt. Back in the terminal, Ted races up to a check-in desk.
Can you tell me if Elaine Dickinson is on this flight?
Well, the whole flight crew is boarded.
Let me see.
Oh, yeah, she is on board.
Ted swallows deeply.
I'd like one ticket to Chicago. No baggage.
Outside, Ted's cab is still parked, the man waiting on the back seat.
Smoking or non-smoking?
Smoking, please.
She hands him a ticket, which is literally smoking.
Have a nice trip.
Ted goes out onto the runway and stares over at the waiting plane. His eyes are wide as he remembers his piloting days from the war. In black and white, aircraft zoom across a cloudy sky.
Striker, this is Red Leader 4. Primary target covered by fog. Decision to proceed is yours. The decision is yours. It's yours.
An aircraft explodes and the horizon tips. Inside the Trans-American airline, two black guys sit chatting.
That hunky muff be messing my old lady? Got to be running cold up.
Subtitle: golly, that white fellow should stay away from my wife or I will punch him. Yes, he is wrong for doing that.
I say, hey, Sky. Subba say I won't see.
I knew a man in a similar predicament, and he ended up being sorry. Don't be so naive, Arthur. Each of us faces a clear moral choice.
You know what they say.
Early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. How true. Ted arrives and, fidgeting nervously, finds his seat. He spots Elaine assisting a passenger and his face softens. Ted sits down next to an old lady with silver grey hair. She stares at his ticket, which is still leaving trails of smoke. A sign lights up. No smoking. El Noah, you smoko. Fasten seatbelts. Putana de seatbelts. Ted fastens his seatbelt and clutches the armrest, staring out in front of him. The old lady leans over to him.
Nervous?
Yes.
First time?
No, I've been nervous lots of times.
In a screened-off part of the main cabin, young Lisa lies on her stretcher. Her mother hooks up her drip. Elaine joins them.
Off real soon, so I better fasten you in tight. Thank you. Oh, Mother, this is so exciting.
I know, but remember, you must get some rest.
That's good advice. You relax, and I'll be back right after we take off.
Thank you. On the tarmac, a young couple are saying goodbye.
God, Bill, I'm gonna miss you so much.
Oh, I'm gonna miss you too. Promise you're right.
Every day.
A train guard in full uniform strolls past.
Better get on board, son.
All aboard!
209er to ground control. We're loaded and ready to taxi.
Goodbye, Bill!
Goodbye, darling! I love you, darling!
209er, taxi to runway 19er.
Bill waves from the open door of the plane.
Goodbye, darling!
Have your picture taken the minute you get there! Send me one, all right?
Okay, here, hurry!
He tosses something down to her.
Oh, but it's your watch! You shouldn't! You're gonna need this!
It's all right! It doesn't work! Goodbye, darling!
Bill!
She runs along the runway, knocking over small scaffolding towers.
With me all the time! I swear to
darling, take care of yourself! Goodbye!
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh?
LA departure frequency 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh?
Request vector. Over.
What?
Flight 209er, clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Tower radio clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over. Roger.
Huh?
Roger, over.
What?
The lights on the runway stretch out, then become smaller as the plane takes off. The aircraft flies against a backdrop of stormy night clouds. Randy's filling up a jug of water. Ted staggers slightly down the aisle, his hand to his head. He knocks back some pills. Randy stares at him.
Right, sir?
Oh, I haven't flown for a long time.
Inside the cabin, a nun is reading a magazine, Boy's Life. A young boy is reading Nun's Life, his eyes widening with surprise.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Captain Over speaking.
We'll be cruising at 36,000 feet this evening. Our arrival time in Chicago will be 10:45 p.m. Central Time. The temperature there is currently 62 degrees with a 20% chance of precipitation. Meanwhile, relax and enjoy your flight.
Would you like something to read?
Do you have anything light?
Oh, how about this leaflet, Famous Jewish Sports Legends?
Yes, thank you.
Ted, what are you doing here?
Elaine, I've got to talk to you.
You shouldn't have come. I don't have time now.
Oh, stewardess.
Excuse me.
Elaine turns away. Ted returns to his seat, watched by the old lady. She takes off her reading glasses and pats his arm comfortingly.
No wonder you're upset. She's lovely. And a darling figure. Supple, pouting breasts, firm thighs. It's a shame you two don't get along.
Yes, I know. Things used to be different.
The old lady puts on her reading glasses.
I remember when we first met. It was during the war. I was in the Air Force, stationed in Drambuie off the Barbary Coast. I used to hang out at the Magumba Bar. It was a rough place, the seediest dive on the wharf, populated with every reject and cutthroat from Bombay to Calcutta. It's worse than Detroit.
Ted, in a white officer's uniform, leans moodily against the bar. A pair of slender legs appear on the counter in front of him. He looks up. It's a woman in a red-spotted frock, playing the trombone.
The mood in the place was downright ugly. You wouldn't walk in there unless you knew how to use your fists. You could count on a fight breaking out almost every night.
A poker game. A hand slaps down on the cards. Another hand grabs the wrist. The two players, Girl Scouts complete with pigtails, start to brawl. The drinkers watch unmoved as one girl throws the other off a staircase, smashing the banister. The punches fly. One of the girls is thrown along the bar. She crashes into the jukebox. Everyone stares at the jukebox. An old sea dog starts to move in rhythm to the music. He pulls off his jacket and joins the others on the dance floor. As the motley crew dance, young and old, fat and thin, Ted stares down into his drink.
I didn't go there that night to fall in love. I just dropped in for a couple of drinks. But suddenly, there she was.
Elaine, in a red dress with thin shoulder straps, is dancing. Her thick brown hair tumbles down over her bare shoulders. She's smiling.
I was captivated, entranced. It hit me like a thunderbolt. I had to ask the guy next to me to pinch me to make sure I wasn't dreaming.
Ted makes his request, and the burly man next to him edges away warily.
I was afraid to approach her, but that night, fate was on my side.
The man Elaine's dancing with is stabbed in the back. He tries to point to the knife in his back. Elaine thinks it's a new dance move and, smiling, mimics him. The man tries to point with both arms. Elaine flaps both her arms. The man collapses. Ted sees his chance and takes off his white cap, tossing it away. As he heads for the dance floor, the cap flies back, hitting the barman on the head. Ted stands in front of Elaine. Their eyes meet and they stand transfixed. Ted takes off his jacket, revealing a white waistcoat. He throws his jacket away and stands one finger pointing upwards, like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. His jacket flies back, hitting him in the face. Undeterred, they start to dance, mirroring each other's movements. The other dancers stand around, watching. Ted picks Elaine up and throws her high above his head. He cranes his neck back, watching for her descent. She drops into his arms. The dance floor's covered with dry ice. Elaine picks Ted up, tucking his ankles under her armpits so he's lying on his back. She twirls him around, grinning widely. She gasps with horror as he flies from her grasp. He flips in the air and lands out of sight, only to leap back, shooting a finger in the air. He thrusts his hips John Travolta style, then links his fingers, making his joined hands rise and fall with a rippling motion. Elaine laughs with delight as Ted squats down and kicks his heels out like a Cossack dancer. Defying gravity, he hovers above the floor, kicking both legs out at once. Some balls are tossed to him and he juggles, still Cossack dancing. In the watching crowd, the Girl Scouts are still fighting. Elaine and Ted dance together, their palms touching. The mirror ball overhead slowly turns and becomes blurred. Later, the bar is deserted apart from Elaine and Ted, who dance slowly, clasped in each other's arms. a barman is sweeping up nearby. A Girl Scout is hurled across the room and lands at their feet, but they're oblivious.
We laughed, talked, danced. I never wanted it to end. I guess I still don't. But enough about me. I hope this hasn't been boring for you.
The old lady's hanged herself.
It's just that whenever I start to talk about Elaine, I always get so carried away. I lose all track of time.
To some passengers.
Would you like to order dinner now?
Yes. Joey will have the steak and my wife and I will have the fish.
When can I see the cockpit, Dad?
Joey, I think the pilots are probably too busy flying the plane for that.
Ah, gee whiz.
I'll tell you what, Joey. I'll talk to the captain and see what I can arrange.
Gee, that'd be swell.
Elaine moves on to the black guys.
Would you gentlemen care to order your dinners?
Bet, babes. Light a piece of the porter. Drinks, I run the job.
Subtitle. I would like the steak, please.
Look at here. I can dig grease and chomp it on some butter and drag it through the garden.
I'll have the fish. Elaine notes it down. A smartly dressed boy approaches a prim young girl. He carries a tray with two coffees.
Excuse me. I happened to be passing, and I thought you might like some coffee.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
She takes a cup.
I want you to sit down.
Thank you. Cream?
No, thank you. I take it black. Like my man.
The boy stares at her. Elaine is putting the menus away when she notices Ted talking to a passenger. She continues with her work, a worried frown on her face. She stops and stares out as her image ripples and blurs. Waves crash on a beach. Ted and Elaine, in swimming costumes, run along the sand laughing. Elaine lies on the sand and pulls Ted to her. They kiss and embrace passionately. A wave crashes over them, covering them completely. The wave draws back, leaving the couple swathed in seaweed.
Oh, Ted, I never knew I could be so happy. These past few months have been just wonderful. Tomorrow, why don't we drive up the coast to that little seafood place and... What's the matter?
My orders came through. My squadron ships out tomorrow. We're bombing the storage depots at Daiquiri at 1800 hours. We're coming in from the north, below their radar.
Come back.
I can't tell you that. It's classified.
Oh, Ted, please be careful. I worry about you so much.
I love you, Elaine.
I love you.
They kiss again. A fish lies gasping beside them, limply twitching its tail. Another wave crashes over them. Back on the plane, Elaine shakes her head, bringing herself back to the present. The plane continues to fly through the night.
Flight 209er, this is Denver Flight Control. You're approaching some rough weather. Please climb to 42,000 feet.
Roger, Denver.
We have a visitor.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Captain Over, Mr. Murdoch, and Mr. Basta. This is Joey Hammond.
Oh, hi, Joey.
Come on up here. You can see better.
Joey, we have something here for our special visitors. Would you like to have it?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Sure. You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Do you want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it? Joey, you ever hang around a gymnasium?
We better get back now, Joey.
No, Joey can stay here for a while if you'd like.
Could I? Okay, if you don't get in the way.
Flight 209er to Denver Radio. Climbing to cruise at 42,000. We'll report again over Lincoln. Over and out.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
You are Kareem. I've seen you play. My dad's got season tickets.
I think you should go back to your seat now, Joey. Right, Clarence?
Oh, he's not bothering anyone. Let him stay here.
All right, but just remember, my name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't.
Roger grabs Joey by the lapels.
Listen, kid. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
He lets Joey go. The boy eyes him warily.
Joey, you like movies about gladiators?
Elaine, just hear me out. I know things haven't been right for a long time, but it'll be different. Like it was in the beginning, remember?
I remember everything. All I have are memories. Mostly I remember the nights when we were together. I remember how you used to hold me.
That's the way I've always wanted it to be, Elaine.
And it won't be. Not as long as you insist on living in the past.
She hurries away. Ted stares out. Again, he sees the fighter aircraft, the horizon tipping, the trails of gun smoke.
You're too low, Ted! You're too low!
A nurse wheels a patient in front of a sign reading U.S. Army Psychiatric Hospital, pentothal available. Inside a ward, each patient has a visitor beside his bed.
Looks so happy today, doesn't he? Thank you. You look so happy today.
Dr. Okay, Robert, slip him down. This won't hurt much.
Elaine's visiting Ted.
We got a telegram from headquarters today.
Headquarters? What is it?
Well, it's a big building where generals meet, but that's not important right now. They've cleared you of any blame for what happened on that raid. Isn't that good news?
Is it? Because of my mistake, 6 men didn't return from that raid.
7, Lieutenant Zip died this morning. But Dr. Sandler says she'll be out in a week. Isn't that wonderful?
Wish I could say the same for George Zip.
Be patient, Ted. Nobody expects you to get over this immediately.
Hey, Stryker, how about a break? I'm getting tired.
Yeah, all right. Take 5.
Ted does a painting of a soldier.
Thanks.
I found a wonderful apartment for us. Has a brick fireplace and a cute little bedroom with mirrors on the ceiling and...
Red leader, I'm going down!
Captain Jolene. He thinks he's a pilot, still fighting the war.
I found the tunnel, Johnson! It's this way! $25 for a cigarette is too much!
Oh.
What's his problem?
It's Lieutenant Hurwitz. Severe shell shock. Thinks he's Ethel Merman.
You'll be swell. You'll be great. Gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here. Start now. Honey, everything's coming up right.
War is hell.
Randy stands holding a tray.
Would you like some coffee before we serve dinner?
No, thank you.
Would either of you like another cup of coffee?
I will, but Jim won't.
I think I will have another cup of coffee.
Frowning, Jim's wife thinks.
Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Randy goes over to the nun.
Excuse me, sister.
Yes?
There's a little girl on board up front who's ill and...
Oh, yes, I saw. Poor child.
Could I borrow your guitar? I thought maybe I could cheer her up.
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
Randy walks along the aisle, hitting everyone's heads with the guitar.
Oh. Hi.
Hi.
Do you mind if I talk to your daughter?
Well, I think that'd be nice.
Hi, I'm Randy.
I'm Lisa. Oh, you have a guitar.
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe you'd like to hear a song.
I'd love to.
Okay. Let's see. This is one of my favorites.
I traveled the banks of the River of Jordan to find where it flows to the sea.
Everyone cranes forward to listen.
I looked in the eyes of the cold and the hungry. and I saw that I was looking at me.
A passenger drops his head down from the ceiling to listen.
I wanted to know if life had a purpose and what it all means in the end.
Jim hugs his son, Joey.
In silence, I listen to voices inside me.
The Hare Krishna monks exchange smiles, as do the pilots.
There is only one river.
Randy knocks Lisa's drip out with the neck of the guitar.
And it flows through you.
Lisa gesticulates, her body in spasm. But everyone's watching Randy, enthralled. Lisa manages to reattach her drip, but Randy knocks it out again. Mrs. Davis tries to revive her daughter, sitting astride her chest, bouncing up and down. Elaine enters the cockpit with a meal on a tray.
A little late tonight. We've been waiting for you.
What's to be first?
Go ahead, Clarence. I got it.
How's the weather?
Not so good. We got some heavy stuff ahead of us. It might get rough again unless we can climb on top.
Yeah, after the war, just wanted to get as far away from things as possible, so Elaine and I joined the Peace Corps. We were assigned to an isolated tribe, the Malumbos. They'd never seen Americans before.
Ted and Elaine, in safari suits, walk into a tribal village. They're greeted by the tribal leader, wearing a sarong, headdress, and strings of beads around his neck.
It was really a challenge during the year introducing them to our Western culture.
The tribal leader raises his hand in greeting. Ted takes it and shakes it.
At first, they didn't know what to think of us, but soon we gained their trust.
The leader holds out his palms. Ted slaps them. The leader punches him. Elaine gives a Tupperware party.
It'll help you better prepare storing foods for the up-and-coming monsoon months. Also, Supperware products are ideal for storing leftovers to help stretch your food dollar. This 2-quart seals and right container keeps hot dog buns fresh for days.
You must understand, these people had been completely isolated from civilization. No one had ever outlined a physical fitness program for them, and they had no athletic equipment. I started them on simple calisthenics, then gradually worked them up to rudimentary game skills, and finally advanced competitive theory. I was patient with them, and they were eager to learn. They seemed to enjoy themselves. It was probably due to the advanced American teaching techniques that we were able to bridge the generations of isolation and communicate so successfully with the Malumbo.
Ted teaches the men basketball. They shoot basket after basket. He joins Elaine.
I think they're getting the hang of it. When we re-enlist, I'll teach them baseball.
Ted, I don't want to stay here. It's time for us to go back home to the plans we made before the war.
A lot of people made plans before the war. Like George Zip.
Elaine turns away sadly.
It was at that moment that I first realized Elaine had doubts about our relationship. And that, as much as anything else, led to my drinking problem.
Ted throws his drink in his face.
We did come back to the States. I tried a number of jobs. Well, I could go on for hours, but I'd probably start to bore you. You know, I really couldn't blame Elaine. She wanted a career.
A Japanese soldier sitting next to him commits hara-kiri.
Oh, I can't stand it.
What is it?
Oh.
Yes?
Oh, it's my stomach. I haven't felt this awful since we saw that Ronald Reagan film.
I'll see if I can find some Dramamine.
Elaine calls the captain. Joey comes into the cockpit and picks up a basketball.
Captain, one of the women passengers is very sick.
Very sick?
I think so, but I've never seen it so acute.
Find out if there's a doctor on board, as quietly as you can.
The captain puts down the phone.
Joey, have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Jim loosens his tie.
Oh, I should have had that second cup of coffee.
He grabs a sick bag. His wife drifts into her thoughts again.
Jim never vomits at home.
I'm sorry I had to wake you. I'm just looking for a doctor. There's nothing to worry about.
Stewardess, I think the man sitting next to me is a doctor.
Sir, excuse me, sir. I'm sorry I have to wake you. Are you a doctor?
That's right.
We have some passengers that are very sick. Could you come take a look at them?
Yes. Yes, of course.
The doctor's already wearing a stethoscope. He goes to the woman. His eyes fixed on her, he holds out his hand to one side. A surgical implement is slapped into his palm.
Let me see your tongue.
Her eyes bulging, the woman cautiously opens her mouth. An egg appears. The doctor extracts it and places it on the tray in front of the woman. Another egg appears. The doctor takes that. Then another. He taps the third egg on the side of a cup, and a bird flies out. The doctor looks at the woman.
I'll be back in a minute.
The doctor nods to Elaine, who follows him down the aisle.
You'd better tell the captain. We've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Tell the captain I must speak to him.
Certainly.
In the cockpit, Victor is sweating. He struggles to loosen his tie, then slumps unconscious.
Victor, we're running into some heavy weather. Can you... Roger, take over.
The captain rushes to Victor, then leaves the cockpit. Roger blinks nervously and clutches at the joystick. He wipes his sweaty forehead with his sleeve. The plane is flying through a stormy sky. The doctor talks to the captain.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No. I mean we can't land for another 2 hours. Fog has closed down everything this side of the mountains. We've got to get through to Chicago.
The plane lurches. Randy drops her tray of food. The captain and the doctor rush to the cockpit. Roger is slumped unconscious. The captain takes the controls, whilst the doctor and Elaine carry Roger out. He has a pilot's shirt on, but also basketball shorts, shoes and socks. The captain struggles to regain control as the needles on the gauges spin wildly. The plane levels out.
What is it, Doctor? What's going on?
I'm not sure. Haven't seen anything like this since the Anita Bryant concert. What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice, steak or fish.
Yes, I remember. I had lasagna. What did he have?
He had fish. Doctor, there are two more sick people, and the rest of the passengers are worried.
They'll take care of the passengers. Find out what the two sick people had for dinner. This is Captain Overspeed.
Been a little bumpy up here, but we'll be past it in a few minutes. A couple points of interest. We're now flying over Hoover Dam. And a little later on, we'll pass just to the south of the Grand Canyon. Meanwhile, relax and enjoy your flight, okay?
Chicago, this is Flight 209er. We're in trouble. We've got to have all traffic below us cleared. And I want a priority approach and landing in Chicago.
Randy goes over to Jim and his family.
Yes. Oh, stewardess, my husband's very sick. Can you do something, please?
Well, the doctor will be with you in just a moment. One thing, do you know what he had for dinner?
Yes, of course. We both had fish. Why?
Oh, it's nothing to be alarmed about. We'll be back to you very quickly.
Randy turns away and pulls a distraught face, her mouth stretched open in horror. Elaine joins the doctor and the captain in the cockpit.
Dr. Room, Mr. Hammond ate fish, and Randy said there are 5 more cases, and they all had fish, too.
Yeah, the co-pilot had fish. What did the navigator have?
He had fish.
All right. Now we know what we're up against. Every passenger on this plane will have fish for dinner. We'll become violently ill in the next half hour.
Just how serious is it, Doctor?
Extremely serious. Starts with a slight fever, dryness of the throat. As the virus penetrates red blood cells, the victim becomes dizzy. Begins to experience an itching, a rash. From there, the poison goes to work on the central nervous system, causing severe muscle spasms, followed by the inevitable drooling. At this point, the entire digestive system collapses, accompanied by uncontrollable flatulence.
The captain, experiencing all the symptoms as the doctor goes through them, slumps over the controls. In the cabin, everything shakes, a jelly on a plate, a woman's bosom. In the cockpit, Elaine and the doctor haul the captain off the controls.
Airline. Automatic pilot.
Automatic pilot.
Elaine flicks a switch and a life-size inflatable doll dressed as a pilot fills the co-pilot's seat. The plane stops shaking.
I'll go back to the passengers.
The doctor leaves. Elaine looks at the captain's empty seat.
This is Elaine Dickinson. I'm the stewardess. Captain Over's passed out on the floor and we've lost the co-pilot. Navigator 2, we're in terrible trouble. Over.
Roger, Elaine. Roger, I read you. This is Steve McCroskey at Chicago Air Control.
Back to you in a minute. Hold all takeoffs. I don't want another plane in the air. When the 508 reports, bring it straight in.
Yes, sir.
Put out a general bulletin to suspend all meal service on flights out of Los Angeles. Tell all dispatchers to remain at the post. It's going to be a long night. How about some coffee, Johnny?
No, thanks.
I want the weather on every landing field this side of the runway, no matter what the size. You understand? Any place where there's a chance to land that plane. Stan, go upstairs to the tower and get a runway diagram. Terry, check down the field for emergency equipment.
Chief, we got fog right down to the deck, every place east of the Rockies. There's no possible place they can land, so they'll have to come through to Chicago.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking. I want the best available man on this. A man who knows that plane inside and out and won't crack under pressure.
How about Mr. Rogers?
Steve lights his cigarette, a frown on his craggy face.
Get me Rex Kramer.
Elaine's in the captain's seat.
Now, Elaine, right next to the throttle is the airspeed gauge. What speed does it indicate?
520 miles per hour.
Good, very good. Now, check your altitude. That's the dial just below and to the right of the airspeed indicator.
35,000 feet. No, wait, 34,000 feet. No, it's dropping. It's dropping fast. Why is it doing that?
The automatic pilot is deflating.
Oh, my God, the automatic pilot, it's deflating.
Well, Elaine, don't panic. On the belt line of the automatic pilot, there is a hollow tube. Now, that is the manual inflation nozzle. Pull it out and blow on it.
In the cabin, the doctor is treating a woman, her feet up in stirrups.
What's going on up there?
Elaine kneels beside the automatic pilot and fumbles with the belt buckle around his waist. She pulls out a small plastic tube. With her head in his lap, she starts to blow. The doctor enters the cockpit, raises his eyes with surprise, then hastily hurries out. The plane flies through the night sky. In the cockpit, Elaine sits in the captain's seat and takes a long drag on a cigarette. She casts a look over at the automatic pilot, who has a cigarette in his smiling mouth. The doctor comes in.
Elaine?
Yes, doctor?
Elaine, you're a member of this crew. Can you face some unpleasant facts?
No.
All right. Unless I get all those people to a hospital quickly, I can't even be sure of saving their lives. Now, is there anyone on board who can land this plane?
In the cabin, Ted misses his mouth and pours a glass of water down his shirt.
No, no one I know of.
I think you ought to know what our chances are. The life of everyone on board depends upon just one thing. Finding someone back there who can not only fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner.
Elaine's pale face is lit up by the flashes of lightning. The plane flies through the stormy sky. Elaine picks up the phone.
Gentlemen, this is your stewardess speaking. We regret any inconvenience the sudden cabin movement might have caused. This is due to periodic air pock we encountered. There's no reason to become alarmed, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your flight. By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
Mass panic breaks out. The passengers run down the aisle, jump on the seats, swing from the overhead lockers. Men fight with swords. The nun and the Hare Krishna try to strangle each other. A car pulls up. A bespectacled man gets out, walks over to a house and rings the doorbell. A woman answers the door.
Hello, I'm Paul Carey from the airline. I'm here to pick up Captain Kramer.
Oh, yes. Come in, Paul. Rex will be right out.
A Labrador jumps up at Paul, pinning him against the wall.
So I understand you have a real emergency down there.
Yeah, something like that. But as I say, they didn't have time to tell me very much.
Paul tries to get away from the dog.
Chef, no. I'll bet you have exciting things happen all the time down there.
Well, the airline business does have its moments, but after a while, you begin to get used to it.
Chef,
come. He gets so excited when new people are here. Are you a pilot yourself?
No, I'm in.
The dog attacks.
It's unbelievable. Just unbelievable. How many times have I warned those people about food inspection?
You'd think after all these years, someone would listen to you.
Well, airport management, the FAA, and the airlines.
He dons his pilot's cap and jacket.
Oh, cheats and liars. All right, let's get out of here.
In the plane, Randy's talking to the two Krishna monks.
I'm sorry to bother you. I was just looking for someone with flying experience.
Only one that we had broke down in a bad accident.
Excuse me, sir. There's been a little problem in the cockpit.
The cockpit? What is it?
It's the little room in the front of the plane where the pilots sit. That's not important right now. You see, the first officer is ill, and the captain needs someone to help him with the radio. Do you know anything about planes?
Well, I flew in the war, but that was years ago. I wouldn't know anything about it.
Would you go up, please?
Ted looks at the passenger next to him, who has doused himself in gasoline and is about to set fire to himself with a lighted match. The passenger nods to Ted. Ted goes. The passenger blows out the match with relief. The passenger explodes.
The stewardess said...
Ted sees the automatic pilot.
Both pilots?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Doctor, I've checked everyone. Mr. Stryker's the only one.
What flying experience have you had?
Well, I flew single-engine fighters in the Air Force, but this plane has four engines. It's an entirely different kind of flying, altogether.
It's an entirely different kind of flying.
Besides, I haven't touched any kind of plane in 6 years.
Mr. Stryker, I know nothing about flying, but there's one thing I do know. You're the only one on this plane who can possibly fly it. You're the only chance we've got.
Ted looks down at the banks of controls. Dials, switches, lights, they go on and on. And on and on. Back at the airport, Ted's cab is still parked in front of the terminal, the man still sitting in the back. He looks at his watch. The meter has reached $1,133. At ground control, Steve's on the phone.
That's right. That's right. That's what I said. You heard me. Tell Omaha to acknowledge and stand by. Every piece of emergency equipment you can reach. Collect rescue units at every mile of the way. Here to the Rockies.
Chief?
We need a pre-landing flight check. Tell him I'm in the dispatch office and I want it here fast.
It's your wife.
I want the kids in bed by 9. I want the dog fed, the yard watered, and the gate locked. And get a note to the milkman. No more cheese.
He slams the phone down.
Where the hell's Kramer?
Paul's in the passenger seat of the car beside Rex Kramer. Rex is on the phone as he drives.
Now we can't do that. The risk of a flameout's too great. Keep him at 24,000. No, feet. One of the passengers is going to land that plane.
Is that possible?
Possible. It's 100-to-1 shot.
Paul's mouth drops open as the car hits a cyclist.
I know this guy. That won't make my job any easier tonight. Ted Stryker was a crack flight up to a point. He's one of those men who, let's just say, felt too much inside. Maybe you know the kind. And all the pieces on a particular mission. Just hope that doesn't happen tonight.
In the cockpit of the plane, Ted puts on the headphones, loosens his tie, and peers at the dials in front of him.
Altitude, 24,000 feet. Level flight, speed 520 knots. Course 090, trim, mixture, wash, soak, rinse, spin.
Elaine comes in.
Doing here? You can't fly this plane.
That's what I've been trying to tell these people.
Elaine, I don't have time to say this gently, so I'll be very direct. Everyone on this plane is in a desperate situation. Mr. Stryker is the only hope we've got.
A little statue of Jesus on the dashboard covers its eyes.
Those are the flaps. That's the thrust. This must turn on the landing lights.
They lurch forward as the plane goes into a nosedive. In the cabin, the passengers lurch to one side. A sign lights up. Return to seat. Go back and sit on her. Ted struggles with the controls.
Mayday!
Mayday!
Mayday? What the hell is that?
Mayday? Why, that's the Russian New Year. You know, we'll have a big parade and we'll serve hot hors d'oeuvres.
Ted flicks a switch and the plane levels out. In the cabin, Jim's wife breathes heavily.
I can't stand it anymore. I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here.
Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Stewardess, please, let me handle this.
A passenger punches her.
Calm down. Now get back to your seat. I'll take care of this problem.
The doctor takes over.
Doctor, you're on the phone.
The nun takes over. A queue of people has assembled to hit Jim's wife with various implements. Rex Kramer marches into the terminal building.
Excuse me, we'd like you to have this flower.
Rex pushes the man aside.
Excuse me, sir, would you...
Donation to the Reverend Moon?
Rex beats them all up as he marches.
Read about Jehovah's Witness? How about Buddhism?
Of Jerry's kids?
Oh, yeah.
Scientology?
Or nuclear power?
In the baggage collection hall, passengers are deposited on the baggage carousel. They get off to collect their bags, which are waiting for them on the floor.
Your attention, please. No frills passengers now arriving. Please have your baggage claim checks ready to show attendant upon leaving the terminal.
I know, but this guy doing the flying has no airline experience at all. He's a menace to himself and everything else in the air. Yes, birds too.
Okay, he's a terrible risk, but what other choice have we got? That's the whole story there, Rex. Everything we know.
All right, Steve, let's face a few facts. As you know, I flew with this man Stryker during the war. He's gonna have enough on his mind without worrying about those times when things weren't so good.
Right now, things aren't so good.
Let me tell you something, Steve. Ted Stryker was a top-notch squadron leader. Long time ago.
A spear is thrown at the wall.
I want you to get on the horn and talk that guy down. Now, you're gonna have to let him get the feel of that airplane on the way. Then you'll have to talk him onto the approach. So help me, you'll have to talk him right down to the ground.
A mango drops onto the desk.
Very well. Put Stryker on the speaker.
Okay, use my radio. It's like I took the wrong week to quit drinking.
Steve swigs from a bottle. Rex goes to the radio.
You can work him direct from here, Captain.
Thanks.
Stryker? Stryker, this is Captain Rex Kramer speaking.
Ted picks up the radio.
Yes, Captain Kramer. Read you loud and clear.
Right, it's obvious you remember me. So what do you say you and I just forget about everything except what we have to do now?
Let's not kid each other, Kramer. You know I've never flown a bucket like this. I'm gonna need all the luck there is.
Stand by, Stryker. My one hope is to build this man up. I'm gonna give him all the confidence I can. Stryker? You ever flown a motor-engine plane before?
No, never.
This is a goddamn waste.
The time's no way you can land this plane.
Have all to yourself. You gotta talk him down. You gotta.
Route him into Lake Michigan. At least he'll avoid killing innocent people.
You're the only chance they've got.
All right. Stryker, you listen close. Flying a plane is no different than riding a bicycle.
Just a lot harder to put baseball cards in the spokes.
First, I want you to get the feel of the plane.
Later, we'll run down the landing procedure.
Rex tosses his cigarette out the
window. All right, now I want you to disengage the automatic pilot. But watch out you don't make any violent control movements like you did in the fighter plane.
All right, I'm going to unlock the automatic pilot.
Ted reaches for the switch, glances nervously at Elaine, then turns the pilot off. The plane judders.
Just remember, the controls will feel very heavy compared to a fighter.
The automatic pilot floats around.
That is perfectly normal.
The passengers scream as luggage falls from the overhead lockers. Ted punches the automatic pilot out of his way. Elaine struggles with it. It holds her from behind, its hands clamped over her breasts.
One more thing. There's somebody there who can work the radio and leave you free for flight.
Yes, the stewardess is here with me.
Good. Have her sit in the co-pilot seat.
Elaine extracts herself.
Elaine, I want you to sit in the co-pilot seat.
She sits down. In the cabin, a passenger stands up and looks angrily at the doctor.
What's going on? We have a right to know the truth.
His nose grows.
All right, I'm going to level with you all. The most important thing now is that you remain calm. There's no reason to panic. Now, it is true that one of the crew members is ill. Slightly ill. But the other two pilots are just fine. They're at the controls flying the plane, free to pursue a life of religious fulfillment.
The radio's all yours now. And keep an eye on that number 3 engine gauge over there. It's running a little hot.
A button flashes with the words, "a little hot."
Stryker, before we start, I'd like to say something.
I know that right now things must look pretty rough up there. But if you do what I tell you, when I tell you to do it...
There's no reason why you shouldn't have complete confidence in your chances to come out of this thing alive and in one piece.
Stryker, what kind of weather are you in up there?
Rain.
And a little ice.
And a little ice.
How's it handling?
Sluggish, like a wet sponge.
Sluggish,
like a wet sponge.
All right, Stryker, you're doing just fine.
It's a damn good thing he doesn't know how much I hate his guts.
It's a damn good thing you don't know how much he hates your guts.
Steve and Rex exchange looks. In the cabin, one of the black guys is groaning. Randy comes over.
Can I get you something?
It's your mofo butter laying me to the bone, jacking me up. Take me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
The prim, middle-aged woman looks at the two guys.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound out of med side.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck her rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't want to help. Chomp don't get to help.
Say can't hang. Say seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains in him.
At ground control, a report is printed out. Steve comes in.
Sis, give me Captain Over's wife on the phone. We better let her know what's going on.
Chief, this weather bulletin just came off the wire.
Steve looks at the paper.
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Well, I can make a cap. Or a brooch, a pterodactyl.
A woman lies asleep in bed. She opens her eyes.
Hello?
Mrs. Over?
Yes, this is Mrs. Over.
This is Ed Macias calling from the airport. There's some trouble on your husband's flight. We don't know how serious it is yet, but Steve McCroskey thought you'd want to get down here right away.
Yes, I'll be right down.
She turns to the horse beside her in the bed.
I've got to go to the airport. You can let yourself out the back door. There's juice in the refrigerator.
In the cockpit, Elaine comes off the phone.
Dr. Rumick says the sick people are getting worse and we're running out of time.
Ted drifts into his thoughts.
I've got to concentrate. I've got to concentrate. Hello? Hello? Echo! 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 Pinch hitting for Pedro Borbón. Manny Mota.
A man turns to his wife, who had the eggs in her mouth.
How you doing, honey?
Jack, I'm so hot, I'm burning up.
I'll turn on some air.
He turns the button above his head. A blast of air howls through the cabin. In the cockpit.
Chicago, the passengers are beginning. When do we start down?
Not just yet. We're in radar range any second now.
I don't understand. It should have been arranged 10 minutes ago.
Gunnison, check the radar range. Anything yet?
He opens an oven with a chicken in it.
It's about 2 more minutes, Chief.
Steve puts the mic down.
2 more minutes? They could be miles off course.
That's impossible. They're on instruments.
In the cockpit, Elaine, Ted, Randy, and the Doctor have formed a band.
This is going to be a real sweat. Gunderson, let me know when you get anything. Got a cigarette, Nels?
I can't take much more of this.
Steve opens a bottle of pills.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines. Johnny, how much more coffee?
No, thanks.
Chief, these reporters won't leave without a statement.
How much longer can those passengers hold out?
Half an hour, maybe 45 minutes.
Who's flying the plane?
One of the passengers. But he's an experienced Air Force pilot who flew during the war, so there's no cause for alarm. Henshaw, take over.
What kind of plane is it?
Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes and
curtains in the window and wheels, and it looks like a big Tylenol.
Okay, boys, let's get some pictures.
The reporters take down all the pictures on the walls of the office and leave. A newspaper spins hot off the press, the Chicago Times. Disaster looms for airline passengers. The New York Tribune, Chicago prepares for crash landing. The National Enquirer, boy trapped in refrigerator eats own foot. A TV newsreader.
This bullet just handed to me. Stricken airliner approaching Chicago.
News no jikkan desu. Udahatsu ga tsutaemasu. Head striker.
A tribesman taps out the news with his sticks. A chat show.
Shayna, they bought their tickets. They knew what they were getting into. I say, let them crash.
On the plane, a passenger, Derek, takes out a hip flask and takes a swig. A woman across the aisle watches disapprovingly. Derek offers the flask to the woman.
Would you like a little whiskey, ma'am?
Certainly not.
The woman surreptitiously snorts a line of coke. In the cockpit.
I won't deceive you, Mr. Stryker. We're running out of time.
Surely there must be something you can do.
I'm doing everything I can. Now stop calling me Shirley.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take out T-C-P. Suck to me, 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 suck to me.
The nun's singing to the black guys. In the kitchen, Randy's preparing drinks and the doctor's preparing syringes. Randy breaks down.
Randy, are you all right?
Oh, Dr. Rumeka, I'm scared. I've never been so scared. Besides, I'm 26 and I'm not married.
Now, we're going to make it. You've got to believe that.
Dr. Rumeck, do you have any idea when we'll be landing?
Pretty soon. How are you bearing up?
Well, to be honest, I've never been so scared. But at least I have a husband.
In the cockpit, Ted stares at the controls. They become blurred.
Stay in formation. Target's just ahead. Target should be clear if you go in low enough. You'll have to decide. You'll have to decide. You'll have to decide.
Ted sees planes crashing. Then he sees the first invented planes, bicycles with wings, one with a flapping parasol. They all crash.
You'll have to decide. You'll have to decide.
The airliner starts to shake. A jet of flame shoots from one of the engines.
Oh, rats! Lost number four.
What happened, Ted? What went wrong?
The oil pressure. I forgot to check the oil pressure.
Watch that oil temperature. What the hell's he doing up there?
Stryker, that plane can't land itself. It takes a pilot who can handle pressure.
Ease off, Rex. He hasn't flown for years. It's not his fault. It could happen to any pilot.
It happened to Barbara Stanwyck.
You can't push him too hard. He might break. Gotta remember who you're dealing with.
Nick, Pete, Jared, there's a fire in the bar. That's right. I can't take the pressure. I was crazy to think I could land this plane.
But Ted, you know...
I don't care.
Ted puts the autopilot in his seat.
I don't have what it takes. I'd be better off with someone who'd never flown before.
Ted leaves the cockpit. Elaine stares around her, wide-eyed with fear. At ground control...
Bad news. Fog is getting thicker.
And Leon's getting larger.
In the cabin of the plane, a customer gets up and walks down the aisle. He passes Ted sitting alone by the kitchen. Ted tries to take a drink, but pours the small cup of water into his eye. A shadow looms over him. It's the doctor.
I know what you're going to say, so save your breath.
No, I don't have a thing to say. You've done the best you could. You really have the best you could. You can't expect to win them all. But I want to tell you something I kept to myself through these years. I was in the war myself, medical. On late duty one night when they brought in a badly wounded pilot from one of the raids. The barely talk. He looked up at me and Doc, he said, the odds were against us up there, but we went in anyway. I'm glad. Captain made the right decision. The pilot's name was George Zipp.
George Zipp said that?
The last thing he said to me, Doc, he said, sometime. The crew is up against it. The brakes are beating the boys. Tell them to get out there and give it all they've got. And win just one for the zipper. I don't know where I'll be then, Doc, he said. I won't smell too good, that's for sure.
Excuse me, Doc. I've got a plane to land.
Ted marches away, leaving the doctor smiling to himself. Ted goes into the cockpit, where Elaine's still in the co-pilot's seat.
All right, Stryker, you better stay up there for a bit. As soon as the fog lifts, we'll bring you in.
I'll take it, Elaine.
Ted tosses the autopilot out of the captain's seat and sits in it himself. He puts on the headphones and picks up the radio.
Listen to me, Kramer. Dr. Rumack says the sick people are in critical condition, and every minute counts. We've got to land now.
Don't be a fool, Stryker. You know what a landing like this means you more than anybody. I'm ordering you to stay up there.
No dice, Chicago. I'm giving the orders and we're coming in. I guess the foot's on the other hand now, isn't it, Kramer?
He'll never make it in this soup, never. Not one chance in a million.
I know. But it's his ship now, his command. He's in charge. Boss, head man, top dog, big cheese, a head honcho.
Captain, number... look at this.
A newspaper.
Passenger certain to die. Airline negligent.
There's a sale at Penny's.
All right, I'll need three men up in the tower. You, Nubar, you must see us.
Me, John, big tree.
Stand by, Stryker. We're going to the tower. Good luck.
We're going to the tower.
The tower? The tower? Rapunzel! Rapunzel!
On the plane, the lady who speaks jive talks to Randy.
Stewardess, How soon do we land?
Oh, it won't be long now. Try not to worry.
The passengers are watching a disaster movie where a plane crashes. In the tower...
We're all ready, sir. This is Captain McCroskey, this is Captain Roberts, Captain Kramer, this is Captain Colosimo, Captain Hinshaw, this is Captain Gatz, Captain Kramer, Captain Gatz, Captain Hinshaw, Captain Roberts.
All right, Colosimo, you work the relay. Roberts, check all air traffic within 5 miles. Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
The officer sniffs his finger suspiciously.
Dave.
Misses over.
Have a cigarette, Nels?
Linda. Your husband and the others are alive, but unconscious.
Just like Gerald Ford.
Now, there's a chance that we can save him if Stryker can get that plane down in time.
That isn't much of a chance, is it?
I don't know, Linda. I don't know. But we're doing everything we can. Now, excuse me, huh?
Johnny puts a comforting arm around Mrs. Over and inspects her dress.
Where did you get that dress? It's awful, and those shoes and that coat. Jeez!
In the radar room, two officers are playing TV basketball on the radar monitor.
8 miles, turn right to heading 044.
We're now at 2,000 feet, beginning our descent.
Steve, I want every light you can get poured onto that field.
Being done right now.
A dumper truck tips a pile of table lamps onto the runway.
Now to all emergency vehicles. Runway is Niner.
Airport vehicles take positions 1 and 2.
Civilian equipment, number 3.
Air Force positions number 4 and 5. All ambulances go to number 3.
Air Israel, please clear the runway.
Air Israel's plane has a long beard. On the Transamerica plane, Randy addresses the passengers.
In a moment, we'll ask you to assume crash positions. Your life jackets are located under your seat. Place the jacket over your head, and when I give the word, pull the cord on the right side flat.
Randy pulls hers.
Your seat cushions are also equipped with a flotation device.
The plane flies low over the skyscrapers of Chicago, knocking an aerial over.
Watch your altitude, Stryker. You're too erratic. You can't come straight in. Got enough fuel left for 2 hours of flying.
I'll take it, Elaine. Listen to me, Kramer. We have people up here who will die in less than an hour, let alone two. I may bend your precious airplane, but I'll get it down.
I'm putting the landing gear down now.
Mr. Stryker, the passengers are ready.
Thanks, Randy. You better leave, sweetheart. You might get hurt up here.
Randy casts an anxious look at Elaine, then goes. Ted glances in the direction of the crash. Elaine looks at him lovingly.
Ted?
Yes?
I wanted you to know, now, I'm very proud.
Tell him the gear is down and we're ready to land.
The gear is down and we're ready to land.
All right, he's on final now. Put out all runway lights except Niner.
Captain, maybe we ought to turn on the searchlights now.
Oh. That's just what they'll be expecting us to do.
The doctor comes into the cockpit.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
All right, now just listen carefully. You should be able to see the runway at 300 feet. Aim a touchdown a third of the way along. A slight crosswind from the right, so be ready for it. Land too fast, use your emergency brakes. Red handle's right in front of you. That doesn't stop you.
Mrs. Over absent-mindedly massages Rex's chest. He glares at her and she withdraws her hand.
That doesn't stop you. Cut the four ignition switches over the co-pilot's head.
Ted peers through the fog and the darkness.
You see us now? You should be able to see the field now.
Two firemen sit on their fire engine on the runway, a dog between them.
Sure is quiet out there.
Yeah, too quiet.
Ted spots the lit-up runway ahead of them.
There it is.
There he is. Stryker, you're coming in too fast.
I know.
He knows.
Below 700 now, still going down. 675, 650, 625. He's holding. He's down.
Sound your alarm bell, now.
All right now, everybody, get in crash position.
Everyone contorts themselves into strange positions.
Put down more flap.
Ted stares at the runway, his teeth clenched. Suddenly, the runway lights go out.
Just kidding.
Johnny puts the plug back in.
Stryker, lift your nose. Straighten your wings. It's coming in too fast. Watch your speed.
He's coming right at us.
Steve jumps out the window.
Coming in too hot. He's up on the front. Watch for that crosswind. Level it out. Aim for the numbers. Let the dip your left wing.
Ted struggles to control the joystick, which keeps rearing up.
Drifting. Keep your eyes on the far end of the runway. You're too low, dammit!
Elaine puts her hands to her face as the plane tips violently.
World! Eyes are down! Down!
The wheels of the undercarriage touch the tarmac.
The brake! Pull the red handle!
Ted pulls a handle, which comes off in his hand.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
The sweat's pouring off Ted like a small waterfall. Passengers in the terminal listen to the announcement.
Flight 209, now arriving, gate 8. Gate 9. Gate 10.
Push a button!
Smoke comes from the window. Ted blinks through the sweat pouring down his face.
Gate 13, gate 14, gate 15.
Ted slams his feet on the foot brake. The undercarriage collapses. The plane skids along the runway, flames underneath it.
Addie Ann, the fiery tunnel! It's a twister!
Gate 23, 24, 25.
The plane stops, the flames still burning. Rex breathes a sigh of relief. Everyone congratulates each other. The press race into a bank of phone booths, knocking them flat. In the plane, the passengers disentangle themselves. In the cockpit, Elaine and Ted take off their headphones. The doctor comes in.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
He leaves. Elaine and Ted smile at each other and start to leave.
Stryker, are you all right?
Yeah.
We're okay.
Ted, that was probably the lousiest landing in the history of this airport. For some of us here, particularly me, I'd like to buy you a drink and shake your hand.
Ted and Elaine leave the cockpit.
And Ted, I just want you to know that when the going got rough...
The passengers leave by emergency chute.
Okay, all right, have a nice day. Have a nice day, thank you for flying Transamerican.
In the cockpit...
Loneliness, that's the bottom line. I was never happy as a child. Christmas, Ted, what does that mean to you? To me, it was a living hell. You know what it's like to fall in the mud and get kicked in the head by an iron boot? Of course you don't. No one does. It never happens. Sorry, Ted, it's a dumb question. Skip that.
Young Lisa is hurried to a waiting ambulance.
Hey, okay, there you go. Have a nice day.
The ambulance drives away. A hubcap rolls by. Rex is still on the radio.
Municipal bonds, Ted. I'm talking AA rating. The best investment in America.
Some distance from the plane, Ted and Elaine stand on the runway facing each other. They share a long, lingering kiss. The camera slowly pans around the couple as they continue to kiss, their arms wrapped around each other. They both turn to look at the plane. The automatic pilot is in the captain's seat. He gives them a salute and taxis the plane along the runway. Flames shoot out where the undercarriage is broken. The plane takes off. Ted and Elaine wave. The automatic pilot waves back. Beside him, another life-size figure inflates, a lady. They fly off into a sky tinged with the red of the early morning sun. The end. Audio description by ITFC. Excerpts from the film are shown alongside the credits for each actor.